You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Welcome back, people of the internet, to another episode of the Waveform Podcast. We're your hosts, Andrew.
And I'm Marquez.
You sound different.
Oh. Got him.
Not for video.
You guys are stuck with me today, nerds. Marquez is out.
Yeah, we've had a pretty crazy week. Marquez is out. Mm. David and I are coming at you on Waveform today.
Yeah, but David Prime, not David Blaine.
David Blaine will be coming at us in this episode.
True.
It is true. We are going to kick off today's episode with a David Blaine, the uncut interview with Marquez. He put something on his channel, but he has the full one here. They sat down for a while David Blaine played with cards and told him his whole kind of story arc.
His fortune.
Yeah, you were here when he was here, right? I missed it.
It looks like very a lot weird. Of fun. There was a lot of weird magic going on.
Did you get that tattoo on your hand?
No, I did not.
Pretty disappointed.
Like 100 DMs saying that I needed sure to get that tattooed onto my hand.
Wait, can you explain that for the listeners?
Yeah. So we were hanging out with David Blaine, and he did not get near me at all. He was maybe like 5 feet away from me the entire time. And then he told me to open my hand, and there was an 8, like, in marker on my hand after he randomly drew an 8 out of a deck. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It was pretty. I wasn't here, but if anyone thinks that was fake, the amount of times I've heard these guys talk about how it happened proves to me that it definitely tricked them. They were not in on that at all.
I'm convinced that he is actually a dark wizard.
Okay.
And that he has a few tricks that he'll just like explain to people so to make it seem like he isn't actually a dark wizard.
He has the sleight of hand tricks to make up for the actual
dark because he never tells his like actually insane tricks.
Sure.
I don't think they're tricks. I think it's just magic. It's
that. We also have Pixel Watch rumors later, Apple repair program, and of course, stick to the end. Trivia question answers will be there. First off, we kind of have to mention it. Elon Musk buying Twitter. Mm-hmm. The deal like was approved.
Yeah, it's still going through.
It's a broad spectrum of things happening right now. There's a lot of stuff going on with it, a lot of different sides of it. The thing about it right now is it's all speculation, right? Yeah. Like what's going
to
happen?
Pretty much. I actually tweeted last week, like, wow, not even daily podcasts can keep up with what's going on.
Exactly. I think like if we were to attempt on Wednesday to say something, it would be done.
It would be outdated.
It would be different by Friday. Yeah.
This is probably already going to be outdated.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll talk about it sometime in the future. We'll see what happens because a million things could happen or almost nothing could happen, even if he does buy it. So we don't really know.
It could. They said that the deal should go through by the end of the year, but that's a long time.
Yeah, we're in Q2 right now. So we've got some time. Okay, cool. So maybe you'll hear us talk about that next year.
Possibly. Yeah, next year.
Right?
Yeah. All right.
Cool. So we're going to hop into the David Blaine interview. Stick around. It's super, super interesting, especially if you haven't watched the YouTube video yet. And we'll be back soon.
All right, David, I have so many questions for you. I guess last time we spoke, we were in the middle of the desert in Arizona. You had just come down from this balloon trip from, was it 20,000 feet? How high did you go? Some crazy.
I actually went to 25,000.
25,000 feet.
Which was on my watch, but he yelled, no, don't pull you up after he said, go, go, go.
Mm.
And it was really, so it registered as 24.9 on there.
Okay.
But I was at 25 on my watch.
I was on the ground. I could see everybody like talking to you and like the whole broadcast setup, and that was a fun time.
But you know what threw me for a loop? I'm happy it was safe and it was for my daughter and she was there and I wanted to keep it happy and fun and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So the dangerous part of the stunt was really in the training, not in the actual stunt itself. And the part that I really was concerned about was the recovery afterwards, obviously, which is that's where the whole team was around to think about that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go higher than anything on Earth. So Mount Everest was 29,000 feet, a little more than 29,072 feet or something like that.
Yeah.
And I guess because the FAA and everybody suddenly thought that I was going to go hypoxic because I wasn't doing the proper O2 breathing. So suddenly I'm being remote popped down and I can't keep, I'm like, where, come on, what's going on? I want to keep going. So anyway, but it was a lot of fun. And because they were able to remote pop everything, they did, as soon as I deployed, jumped down, they recovered the entire rig. And
that,
all of the-
that was a high-tech experiment. Like, I got to see the like the aftermath of, like, so you jump out, they've got the remote control and, like, tracking of this huge rig, essentially an aircraft. It continues to fly. They lower it to the ground. They recover it. Like, I got to see all that happen.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with the amount of tech happening, even though at its core, it's you with some balloons, which was amazing.
But if it was just me and the balloons, then it would have actually been something that I wasn't into because I didn't want to just leave balloons to go float away and like destroy the environment, you know, whatever.
Just go pop in the desert
somewhere. Yeah. So that's that. So the big team and all of the work really was on how do we recover the rig? How do we bring everything back down? Which is they remote pop every single balloon and then lower it. Yeah. So
you put that on YouTube.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things about, like, I'm pretty sure I've found, and I'm sure a lot of people watching this have found your magic on YouTube somewhere. And if I look back far enough, you're easily one of, I don't speak to a lot of people who have been uploading to YouTube longer than me, but you're one of the first people to like blow up on YouTube. People know David Blaine magic from YouTube.
It started with YouTube.
So why did you decide to put stuff on YouTube? Because I know my answer, but like sharing magic with the world.
Well, I felt like the medium was changing. So I felt like the natural progression, and now it really is. Now the only way people look at things is on their phones, which is unfortunate, but therefore there's also the fortunate part, which is they have lots of access to anything that they can think of. So you can learn anything from anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime, which is really speeding up the process of the learning curve, which is amazing. But now there's YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, which I haven't figured out yet. It's so complicated.
We're on the same page with TikTok, I think.
Yeah. But no, I'm not against any of it because I actually like all of it. But it's just, my brain hasn't understood how to do that yet because it's like with YouTube, it was kind of like magic was perfect because it was like, here's a trick, here's a reaction, boom. That's really, and that content is quick and it's gratifying.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it started to move to like, there's no time for anything. It has to be like the fastest trick and the fastest reaction.
A couple seconds.
Yeah.
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 Quick hits.
Yep.
I mean, I remember I've seen a lot of your videos and magic, and that was actually part of the entertaining part was that takes you into a sort of a rabbit hole and you just watch as many as you can. You can't get enough. And the reactions from people when you do a trick to them and blow their mind is, I think you described it this way. It's like this universal language. Like everyone has the same like primal mind blown reaction to a good trick.
And yeah.
YouTube lets you share that with way more people than if it was just one at a time. Basically.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It allows you to reach anybody anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
So now there's a sort of a new chapter because I've seen all these tricks and all these incredible things you've done. But you've now decided to make a class and actually teach magic.
So I've been reluctant forever to do magic kits or do any of those types of things, which is ironic because my mother's a teacher and my brother's a teacher. So they're both teachers. So I always do understand the amazing and important effect that you have by teaching people stuff that you worked really hard on. But I was still reluctant because magic is such a confusing area because these secrets are so powerful, but you don't want to just give them away because that's part of the art itself.
Yep.
So every time somebody said to me, though, could you teach me a trick? I always feel bad that I can't. You know, it's like, I want to, of course I want to. And often I do teach them something quickly. Like I'll be like, here, I could teach you something, but that's not really good enough. So the idea of being able to create any kind of class that I wanted with Studio, which is Max called me up and he understood all about magic. He did all of his research. He could perform magic. He also learned how to play chess so he could play Magnus, and he lasted quite a few moves against him. And he learned how to memorize a deck. So when he showed me all these things, and he said, well, I'll do whatever you want to make this class something that's incredible and amazing. Yeah. It was very difficult to say no to that, because and I know if anybody wants to take the class, they're not just going to get the secrets. They have to actually enroll. They have to like commit to it. It's a month long class. So the idea of a student trying to learn some of the things that were what got me started, some of the basic things in magic that I love, I think that was kind of the inspiration, and that's what led me to agree to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's an incredibly high number of people that I could think of right now who, if I said, if you could learn magic from David Blaine, would you take that opportunity? And I think they'd all say yes, but it's really hard for you to take that time to teach all of them. It's kind of like the same thing you were just saying, like, I want to take the time to talk to everybody about tech, but I don't have that amount of time. So being able to put out something actually good and like that you have control over and that you can really make amazing and share this with as many people as possible that's like 2022 David Blaine. That's pretty sick. It's dope. I also want to ask you, like, how do you decide what stuff to share in the class versus what stuff you continue to work on and evolve?
So most of the stuff that I share is actually for beginners, for people that are, you know, beginner, intermediate, people that want to be able to like walk into a situation and do some magic and not, you know, I think it's such an amazing art form, and it's such a deep dive into psychology. It's technical, it's math, it's science, it's logic, it's all these things combined. And there's a philosophy behind it. So I feel like the people that, you know, come into it, I feel like they'll have a new appreciation for the actual art of magic itself, actually. I think like you're going to suddenly realize, oh, wow, when this magician's doing a trick, he does, it's a lot of work. It's not just like he's doing this quick trick that has no meaning and it's like, oh, he learned it for 3 seconds and now he can do it. It's like, oh, wow, these guys, all these magicians out there work really hard at their craft and it's special.
Can confirm. I mean, you're seeing it now, but you've taught me a little bit. I've been working on the tricks. I can't even do this every time.
Perfectly. Yeah, but you learned it fast.
Wait, let me see if I can do one right now. What is it called again?
Charlier cut. Yeah, Charlier. You learned it fast.
Is there a person named Charlier?
There you go. Yep, perfect.
It's not. Yeah, it's decent.
No, you just did it, but you learned it fast.
But that's the next
phase would be like this.
Oh, see, that's just.
And the next would be like this. These are the ones that I don't go into teaching because these are, you know, this is different.
I do like the.
Those things.
The evolution of a trick, like here's level one, here's level two, here's level three. That's sick. I am also like, I think we talked a little bit off camera about this, but I feel like I learned a lot of how I communicate ideas through making YouTube videos, like getting creative and like public speaking in a way. I gave a talk to some Googlers at this thing, and you know, I came off stage afterwards and somebody said, that was amazing. How often do you public speak? I was like, that's the first time I've ever done that. But I was really just in like video mode. I'm curious, like, does performing magic sort of have a similar effect for you? Do you find new ways to communicate things? Does that help you in other parts of life, even just developing these tricks and working on stuff?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So the idea of just learning how to feel confident enough to go out and actually try something, and then it is a performance, it is public speaking. So there's a technical part of it that's really, you know, difficult that you can master with repetition, but then you have to learn the other part of it, which is how do I go out there and communicate this? And that's the part that's the most interesting to me, because everything is really just a trick. But when you apply what your meaning is or why you're doing it or who you're doing it to or how you can relate to that person, then it becomes something much deeper and much more interesting.
Yeah. And you've done like these tricks to almost any person I can name has experienced some sort of incredible magic. Who's your favorite reaction you've gotten?
I mean, you know, there's so many amazing reactions, but you mean on somebody like well-known or whatever?
Maybe you did a trick and you just were like, I can't believe this person loved the trick so much.
I mean, I was once at a dinner with a dear friend of mine and Mickey Rourke and Tupac. And, you know, Tupac, we were at Cafe Tabac and he was smoking at the table. So he's a little buzzed. And I start doing magic to him. And the next thing I know, I look over and he's like on the floor laughing, like kicking his legs like a little kid. And that was, yeah, that was a pretty, and he's also Tupac, you know, so that was a pretty exciting reaction. But there's all kinds of reactions that I get that are amazing. And sometimes it's the opposite. It might just be somebody's completely still. Like a kid that I did magic to in a Barstow, and I made a coin disappear off his hand. It was in my first show.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah. And he just stood there and he's like, cool. And that was all. And I obsessed over him. But, you know, and then I wanted to put that trick on ABC and they were like, no, it's not his reaction. I was like, this is the best thing. And then after that, I think he got a Taco Bell commercial or something.
That's an iconic, and that's all over YouTube. That's what I'm talking about. See?
And then what was funny was those spoof videos that came like not that long ago, like 10 years ago or something. You had those like David Blaine street magic videos.
Did you enjoy those? You got to watch those as they came out. That was some of my favorite videos. Yeah.
That guy Mikey Day got a lead in SNL after that.
That's incredible. That's incredible. So yeah, you know, magic, these types of things, they're all creative. I view you as a creator, basically, is what I'm saying. Like you put stuff online, you adjust the way you present, you're creative in the way you combine things, and you're able to make something new. And that's like amazing. And you get to share it with people. And that's like inspiring for me. So I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Who have you not yet performed a trick for that you want to?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a guy named Grigori Perlman who I'm obsessed with.
Okay.
And he won the Fields Prize. He's like a mathematician. He lives in St. Petersburg. Okay. And he's like one of the more famous recluses. The other guy would be J.D. Salinger. But Grigori Perlman is like, he's unbelievable. As a matter of fact, he turned down the prize of $1 million for solving an impossible conundrum that took him, you know, once he solved it, the math community, it took them, I think, 12 years to even realize that he was right. So when they gave him the $1 million prize, he turned it down. And finally, a reporter found him, they say, living in a cockroach-infested apartment on his mother's floor. And they were like, how could you turn down $1 million? What's wrong with you? Like, how could he do it? And he said, please don't bother me. I'm busy picking mushrooms. So that guy would be pretty amazing to go do magic.
I think so. We'll try to make it happen through the power of YouTube. We'll see how long that takes. But David?
But I want to say one other thing, Marquez. So, okay. So like I said, I always try to teach people magic.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm always like the way you are with your hands and your ability to learn, it's mind blowing. It was a very fast learning curve, as you know. And I reacted to that. So it just I was very impressed, you know, and once again, that was part of my excitement in the beginning was just, I know you're so athletic, you're so smart, you're so talented. So seeing the immediate learning curve was inspiring. And then you pulled the stuff off quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, I had the best teachers. So I definitely had a pretty good head start there.
Yeah, but you're the way you learned it and the way you pulled it off right away. We did it to your crew, did it over Zoom, and you improvised and you came up with stuff. So that, you know, that was for me, that's worth the whole thing right there. Like watching you learn and adjust and come up with things. And it was fun.
Yeah. It's fun. The improvisation part is the hard part, but it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, but you were like throwing people. You're like, oh, make sure I don't have some special thing so I can see through the camera. The odds.
The tech stuff, the odds. Yeah, no, it's all fun. It's all fun. All right. So every podcast, everyone we have on the podcast,
right?
We give them a keyboard.
Yeah.
And we just say, type the alphabet A through Z.
Wow. And I'm slow as
all you do.
I am slow.
You might be surprised.
No. I'm slow.
Is perfect. Having your name on a leaderboard is going to be great.
Slow, but I'll do it. But okay. I mean, like beyond slow.
You're going to hunt and peck, right?
Of course.
Fine. Are we recording already?
All right. Ready?
Go for it. All right. Chiclet style. Double digit? Single digit. Come on, man. That's fast.
Is it?
Single nine seconds.
That's not fast.
That's you, it's not I was fast, getting like 25 second vibes.
I'm not a typer.
That's pretty good for not a typer. You're not last.
This is not my thing. No, 9.7 is slower than 9.4.
No, 9.7. All right, well, you're still single digits, which I don't think is the worst thing in the world. Save it.
Hold on.
You can hit another one.
Enter.
You want to hit it again?
Yeah, let's just see.
Go for it.
I'm not going to.
See, once you start, it's addicting.
Ah. Let me do it again. Hold on.
Bumped it down a little. 9.6.
Hold on.
Sub 9.
All right, I'm keeping
that.
my 882
is my lucky number.
There you go.
We can say you're lucky with numbers, but I think we know at this point you're going to get a good number anyway.
8-2.
Well done. All right. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. We'll catch you guys next time.
All right, welcome back. Looks like dark wizardry doesn't really help typing.
No, you know.
Unfortunately,
some people have better things to do with their lives.
I don't know if that's a diss or like a pro to not
I mean,
be good
dude,
at typing.
I spent like an entire summer just like trying to get better at typing.
Because
I was really into mechanical keyboards
really
in like 2014. So.
Same here.
2012.
I'm sure a lot of people can relate.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Do you have a let's do a trivia question.
Oh boy.
See, this is your first trivia. I mean, so it's only my like third trivia question, but let's see what Adam's got for us.
So there's a twist today. Because Marquez is out, David, whatever score you get is getting added to Marquez's.
Don't kill me, dude.
So you better
don't kill
better
me,
come
Marquez.
Correct.
Okay.
We'll try. First question. When did Tesla release their first car?
Okay.
I think I have an idea.
And I'm probably very wrong. Marquez would have gotten this.
Yeah.
How could you do this?
That's Marquez why is going to listen to this after he's and like slamming
his
steering
wheel. That's exactly why I chose this.
All right, we're going to hop on a quick ad break. And when we get back, Pixel Watch, I know you're excited to talk about this. Cool.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
All right. Welcome back. we are going to talk about Pixel Watch, something we've definitely never said on this podcast before. Just kidding, probably like 30 different times. But yeah. This seems like, would you say this is the closest we've gotten to seeing a Pixel Watch?
Yeah, I mean, we saw what is allegedly an actual Pixel Watch in the wild. And this thing has been rumored for as long as I can remember.
Probably since I started working here.
I mean, I am pretty sure that after the Apple Watch came out, everyone probably started talking about the Pixel Watch. But it's been years now since the first render started leaking. And like there were rumors it was going to ship with the Pixel 6 and then it didn't. And now there are rumors that it might ship with Pixel 7, but we might see rumors of it at we might see like a intro to it at I.O.
Okay, that would be interesting. So what was that I.O. last year where they talked about like the partnership with Tizen? Is that what the like Samsung stuff?
Thanks.
It was where they were like outside and it was eerily quiet because of COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they also shut down the air traffic over Mountain View.
That was definitely when they talked about their partnership. So that was kind of, to me, that made it feel like maybe I should stop thinking about Pixel Watch because it made it seem like they gave up and they're just like, let's work with Samsung instead.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they kind of, the funny thing is like Tizen is quote unquote dead, but they sort of made Tizen into Wear OS.
Okay.
And Tizen was a lot better optimized than Wear OS. Like Wear OS generally was just kind of laggy, but so it looks like Wear OS, but it has like a lot of Tizen features.
Okay.
Anyway, Wear OS is very different now than it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. But like you said, we saw one we think we saw one. It's, it's kind of the classic, the old iPhone left at a bar. Yeah. It's literally left at a bar.
There's this wacky story that happened where this guy basically left a Pixel Watch prototype at a restaurant. So the story goes that this guy's friend works at the restaurant and he found the Pixel Watch and he apparently held on to it for a couple of weeks, but nobody came back to claim it.
Yeah.
So then he gave it to his friend who is apparently the like self-proclaimed tech nerd.
Yeah.
I think that's what he called himself online. And then he posted about it on Reddit.
And it got pretty big.
Yeah, it got pretty big.
And then obviously everybody, there's a million articles about it because wearables are hot. And especially Pixel Watch.
He posted a bunch of photos of his like wrist with it on and all these things. And I think the craziest part about it is that it looks pretty much like all of the renders that we have been seeing for literally years.
Yeah, it does look very similar to some of them. Some of the most recent renders we've seen since Google acquired Fitbit had that very like Fitbit rounded, like really domed rounded edge on it. I think it looks so much like the Louis Vuitton smartwatch that we have. The Louis Vuitton watch, it's like super domed and they actually do a kind of cool thing where it like bleeds to the edges and you can see it from the sides. But isn't there a picture like of the bezels on this new one?
There's a thick bezel on this thing.
So I don't think it's going to do that.
Yeah. There were some leaked renders that may or may not be real. Again, like everything that's leaked is speculation.
Yeah.
But some photos from like a PowerPoint presentation that said like almost bezel-less design. But then you look at the photos that the guy took photos of and very not bezel-less.
Yeah. And so
very not bezel-less. It might be a touch sensitive ring though.
Like ring on the outside. That would be really cool. Have we seen that?
I think the Galaxy Watch 4 non-classic has a digital ring.
Okay. That's really cool.
Could be wrong. I think so.
We'll double check that. But so, okay, he found it at a bar, gave it to this guy.
Yeah.
It does not turn on, correct?
So he tried to boot it, and it shows a Google logo.
Yeah.
And that's why it's pretty much like, oh, this is like a Pixel Watch prototype.
Okay.
And there's also like pins on the side that probably will not be in the final design, so it's almost definitely like a internal version. And it had a box too, and the box was like this product has not been certified with the FCC and like all of this
stuff. Left the box at the bar.
It was like with the whole thing, and on Reddit everyone was like, this is definitely a planned leak, and I don't know,
so I don't think so, but I definitely, there's a storyline I could see where this would be planned, and my biggest speculation there is how he like he posted it and then he's like, oh yeah, my friend forgot to give me the bands to it, and then made a whole second post of it like then on his wrist.
Yeah, I mean, I think this guy is telling the truth.
I think it's legit also.
Yeah. Whether or not somebody like intentionally left it at a bar and then didn't come back for it. Like if you leave something like that at a bar, you should probably be looking for it.
Yeah. Why bring it in the first place?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you should probably be checking
Leave
for
it in your
the
car.
Time.
Don't bring it in a restaurant. Yeah. Why would you bring it in a restaurant? It's so strange.
It's there's minor skeptical in there. But
anyway,
whatever.
He tried to boot it. It showed the Google logo and wouldn't get past that. So people are thinking that it doesn't even have an OS on it right now.
Okay.
But then it died. And there was no charger with it, so he had no way to, like, recharge it to try to get to the logo again and all that stuff. But, yeah, like, his friend did have separate bands that were in another box, that were in a separate box. And it looks like it's a proprietary band system, just like the Apple Watch.
Okay.
Which is, like, good and bad. I don't know how much support for bands Google is going to have. That's sort of the thing with the Apple Watch is that, like, they release new bands all the time.
Yeah. And they're
I
great.
Hope the third-party ecosystem of bands would get good on the Pixel Watch because the Apple Watch third-party bands, there's so many. People make them on Etsy.
Exactly, yeah.
And they're all really good, and you can get really good ones for really cheap.
Yeah.
So
we've talked about it before. I was using a braided loop from Etsy, and it's fantastic. Where, funny enough, I got a different band for the Garmin watch I'm wearing right now that was third-party from Etsy.
Oh.
And I was, like, reaching down to tie my shoe, and it just... This right now is the normal one. It just fell off because... Garmin has these little connector pins that I don't think are great.
Oh.
And when you're third party making that, it just bent and just pulled the whole band off.
Bang.
So, yeah, I was thinking that, like, third party bands are awesome. There's a million of them. But when you're Apple and you have that sales number, they can, like, way more people are going to make those and you can find better ones where then you're looking for third party. And for whatever reason, every first party band feels like it costs an arm and a leg.
It
hurts to buy, like, spend $80 on it.
Dude, they're so expensive.
It's crazy.
And the nice Apple Watch ones are $100.
Yeah.
For, like, and you can get almost the exact same quality on Amazon or like on Etsy for like $20.
And it's really a bummer.
$7.
It's great to do that because, like, you're wearing a watch all the time, you know, switch it up every once in a while,
totally
have different
colors.
Ones. Exactly. That's like the fun thing. It's also a great gift. If you have a friend with an Apple Watch band is like one of the best easy gifts you can give to someone.
True. Yeah, I think people have been wanting a Pixel Watch for so long because the Apple Watch has been so dominant. There have not been, like, a ton of great Android Wear, well, Wear OS smartwatches.
Yeah.
The Samsung Galaxy Watch 4 is definitely pretty good and probably up there for, like, one of the best alternatives if you want a Wear OS watch. So considering Google partnered so intensely with Samsung on the new Wear OS and then apparently on this Pixel Watch... That's going to be a big deal. The rumors are actually that it's going to be running an Exynos chipset.
Okay.
Which is good news, in my opinion, because most of the Snapdragon Wear chipsets in the Snapdragon ones just have terrible battery life, bad, like, performance. They've never been great. They went a super long time between the first generation and the second generation chip. And then the second generation chip wasn't that much better. And it was just like, oh, it was such a mess. But considering the Galaxy Watch 4 has pretty darn good performance and decent battery life, lasts a little over a day. I mean, it would be nice if it was better.
quick question there. What would you say is an ideal watch battery life?
I mean, ideal for a smartwatch, I would love at least 2 days. But the Apple Watch right now is like a day and a quarter.
Yeah.
And I think that's about what the Galaxy Watch 4 is as well.
Okay. I like go back and forth on what I think is good. So I've been trying this Garmin for a month.
I mean, those last forever.
It's insane. Like working out in 1 week, or I had an 8 day battery life on this for a week. And that's with like four or five of those days with at least an hour of working out and tracking, which I thought was incredible.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's too clunky. I don't wear it to bed. So, like, why do I care that much? So it's nice. 2 days feels like perfect to me. You can forget a night of charging it and be okay.
You know what's always
day?
Been weird for me is the Apple Watch, like, it has all these sleep tracking features, but I would never wear it to sleep.
Because
I need to charge it at nighttime because it's almost dead by the evening.
True. I also, and I don't know if this is only me, if you put your arm under your pillow and you're wearing a watch like ever, I hate it. It'll like wake me up because it gets stuck on the pillow, like sliding your arm under it. So that's why I feel like I can't. I didn't like my Apple Watch.
Like
when
you're
sleeping.
Typing with a ring on or a watch on or something. Yeah.
Weird. But
yeah. But I think everyone's just been like really wanting Google to have parity, like ecosystem parity with Apple. And there's the Pixel Buds, but they're pretty buggy. There's no Pixel Watch and they have Chromebooks. So like right now they don't really have device parity, but if they can get a watch out, hopefully they'll get closer. It's just that Apple's had almost eight generations to improve before Google even released one.
For sure. So. I mean, it was the big talking point also with Google doing its own chip in the Pixel this year, which was like, you know, everyone always says Apple's got their ecosystem because they're making their own stuff. So now Google's making it. Are we going to get there? So it tracks onto there. You know, you did say they do have their Chromebooks and there is some minor Tensor, connectivity.
Minor connectivity.
So hopefully Pixel Buds could get better. But Pixel Watch feels like the big, like, device.
And wearables are really hot. So, but I think a lot of people, the reason a lot of people say they're staying on iPhone is like iMessage and the Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. Like so many people get attached to the Apple Watch because it gamifies fitness in such a good way.
Yep.
So apparently there was a reference to the Pixel Watch in a recent Pixel update that 9to5 Google found. It is codenamed Rohan, which could mean a couple of different things. One, it is the fictional kingdom of men in Middle Earth.
Okay.
In Tolkien's world. Interesting. And then it is also in Japanese, it means accompanying dew. These are just things I found on Wikipedia. And so I was like, there's multiple like possibilities of what it could mean, but these are the only two things that sound feasible.
And how? I
accompanying dew would be like, oh, it comes with you and it's sticky. So it like sticks to you. Like, it's accompanying your, I don't know. This is like,
I like it.
I don't know. I'm like totally guessing.
I mean, you're talking about a bunch of like software developers and stuff that make some crazy code names. Yeah. So that wouldn't be, I wouldn't be surprised.
Like all the pixels are always like Marlin and like, they're all fish. Shamu.
Yeah. They are a lot of fish.
Shamu. Yeah. But otherwise, Rohan, Lord of the Rings. I don't know. Anyway, they might be showing it off at I/O and then releasing it with the Pixel 7. That's like the current rumor. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but considering they like already had a hardware unit in the wild, it's probably pretty close to the release.
I think that sounds totally plausible, especially with talking about watch stuff last Google I/O. Yeah. And then we're Google I/O's 2 months away?
Coming it's up May. Pretty quick. It's actually May. Really soon. Okay. I think it's in a couple weeks.
So we might see it pretty soon then.
Yeah. So that'd be dope if we saw it soon.
Okay. Yeah. Ideal pick. What right now? In this new Pixel Watch, what would be like a key feature that would make you super excited for it? And like, we are also, you know, this has been rumored for so long, it will never live up to the hype, right? I think we can agree with that. We've been talking about this for how long?
I think that's most Pixels, to be honest. This year, it's going to be the year.
But,
it's
but
gonna
you
be
have,
the best
you
Pixel.
Have 5 years of nothing, pretty much, of like,
first generation everything is so clunky, though.
It's going to be tough. But like, what's something that would look really promising on this to you?
They need to match Apple in terms of like the fitness stuff. That I think that's going to be what keeps people in it.
And with Google Fit already.
Yeah. And
they've got a head start on
Google has done a pretty good job of making their fitness stuff more robust. Like they had this whole campaign, like Get Fit with Google, either last year or the year before. I think it was 2020, actually.
I think it was too. Yeah.
And they revamped Google Fit and it's nicer now. I don't think they have team. They might have team stuff.
I don't know. There are a few because I'm using a weird thing right now. Google Fit works in the Challenges app that we use. Yeah. We have found it's a little clunky, but that's Challenges. That's not Google Fit. But there are a lot of ways to connect things to Google Fit, which is kind of awesome.
I think that they're going to need ways to compete against your friends, and they're going if they added group competitions.
Yeah, take one step up.
That
on
would be one step
Apple
up
Watch.
On Apple. So and maybe force Apple to add it. But yeah, I don't know. The design right now is, I know a lot of people like round smartwatches, so that's good. But that bezel is very thick.
It looks thick. It looks tall, which is usually a gripe of mine on
watches.
I like it thin. I don't like it to be huge and clunky. I think watch
Adam's
bands.
Adam's screaming internally because he has like the tallest watch ever
his is a cool watch though, that's not true. Like a nerdy smartwatch. What did Mr. Wonderful told Marquez? These watches are all 20% off retail or something like that. He's not a big smartwatch fan.
But. Yeah, he said that when he walks into a room and someone's wearing an Apple Watch, it tells him that they're 20% off retail. Like whatever deal you're about to get, you can get for 20% cheaper because they're wearing an Apple Watch.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay.
Watch snobs don't love smartwatches.
Yeah,
I think it's the safe bet there.
Yeah.
Exciting. So you think we might see something about this possibly in May?
Yeah, I mean, that's the rumor.
I'll
Whether or not they're going
to
do that.
I'll burn you at the stake if you don't.
Literally, that's just all it, that's what it, that's the rumor. I'm just retelling.
I think this is fun. We've had, as much as we've talked about Pixel Watch, we've had twice as many opportunities because there are renders all the time. Like we've said, this is the closest thing we've gotten to actual feeling like it's there.
Seeing a thing actually in the wild is like, this is definitely coming up.
It also, and it just has that fun old tech news nostalgia feel of the iPhone being left at the bar. Like, we don't get that very often. It's usually leaking themselves. So if this was planned out, it was brilliantly planned. And I'm all here.
There was
for
a funny Reddit comment. Someone was like, oh, this was definitely left at a bar. And someone was like, isn't it weird that someone knew what it was? Like, they, it seems like they would have left it and no one would have known what it was and they would have just like thrown it away or something. And then someone said, like, this is probably the 25th one they've left at a bar. Just hoping that some nerd walks
a lost
over
and found
sees,
box
and
at
knows
that
what
restaurant.
It is. Yeah, totally.
I'm excited for it. What the next thing will be able to fall out of Sundar's pocket while he's doing while he's doing IO. Maybe that's how we'll announce it.
Or he'll just be wearing it.
Yeah, just wear it.
That would
Don't
be a
say
flex.
I could see Hiroshi doing that.
Yeah. All right. Hiroshi was using a Galaxy Fold like during the period where they had to where everyone needed to return theirs. He just kept using it.
He's the best.
Yeah, he's just been using a Fold forever.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So in a way, this is kind of giving me like Moto 360 vibes, because in a way, the Moto 360 was sort of the original Pixel Watch.
The flat tire.
It was the first. Well, it wasn't the first Android Wear smartwatch because there was the LG G Watch that came out.
I had that. I loved it.
It was so ugly.
Really?
It was so ugly. It was like square and had huge bezels. But then the Moto 360 came out.
I remember.
And it had the flat tire, of course, but that was such an attractive smartwatch. It was so nice. I think I bought 10 of them.
Really?
That was way back in the day when I was a poor college student and had no money.
That definitely tracks by 10 smartwatches.
And I was like, I'm going to sell them to all my friends. Oh. So I like stayed up till 2 a.m. and like ordered a bunch and then sold them to all my friends. And we all just like were the only ones wearing smartwatches because it was like one of the first smartwatches.
You guys are probably the coolest kids on campus.
You could say that.
You
could say that.
Yeah.
That was such an incredible smartwatch. And in my opinion, had a much nicer design than this. And that was like, 2013? I think that was 2013, possibly 2014 max.
It was a long time ago. They've had a few iterations since then, but they haven't quite gotten
They had
the
second gen that was a little nicer. And then the third gen was made by a completely different brand.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, they just took they like sold them the brand name or something. And then someone else made it. And apparently it was decent. But
we never tried it. We just never got time to. Yeah. Maybe I'll give it a shot.
I never minded the flat tire thing. And that was like the peak days of Facer. Do you remember Facer?
I do not.
It was this app that you could use to like design your own Android Wear faces.
Cool.
And it was like this whole thing. I made all these ridiculous Android Wear faces.
That was back when people were making like Fallout faces and everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay,
like,
I remember some of that.
The boy with like the arm that would tick. Yeah.
By the way, it was 2014.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was a freshman in college, but it must have been after Christmas, I guess. I just remember that I.O. Oh, yeah, it was I.O. I remember the I.O. and I was like, that was the most stoked I've been about anything. Yeah. That might have also been the I.O. where they announced Google Glass.
Did a little better.
Google
neither
had a
of
lot
them
of,
did great. So.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But anyway, I hope to get as much hype from this physical device as the Moto 360, but I still think the Moto 360 had a superior design, even with the flat tire.
That's just nostalgic at this point.
Yeah.
It's fun.
So,
trivia question.
Oh, right.
You ready for number two?
I forgot.
Yeah. Just they kind of sneak up on you once you get
it. Oh, we're getting the second one and then we answer at the very end?
Yeah.
Okay.
Trivia question number two.
Oh, boy.
Andrew does not use Chrome or Safari. He uses Mozilla Firefox. What was it originally named?
Oh.
Yep.
It was not originally called Firefox?
Nope.
Wow. I used to live like right down the street from Firefox.
Really?
Yeah. And they were definitely Mozilla.
Save this discussion for the end, please.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. Yeah. And we'll ponder this a little bit during while you listen to ads. And we'll be right back.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
And we're back. Now we're going to talk about the Apple Repair Kit.
Yeah, finally we talked about repair kits like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and specifically mentioned Apple announced it. And just kind of, I think they announced it in September.
Yeah,
we're in April now. This will come out almost in May.
I just remember that a couple of weeks ago, I was with Brandon, and he like broke the back of his iPhone, and we went to the Apple store together. And he brought it up to the employee there. He was like, so what about that self-fixing Apple repair like program? And they were like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so we came back to the studio and we were like, wait, wasn't that supposed to be a thing? Yep. And the people gave them like a ton of props for like aiding right to repair and all those things.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure we're all eager to give them credit for any right to repair just because we want it to actually happen. But it did release this week.
It did release this week.
It's finally here. This is after Samsung and Google both just released a partnership with iFixit, and I believe also like Valve and Microsoft are doing stuff as well. It seems like repairability is becoming a thing, and I do think a lot of it has to do with potential repairability scores coming in other countries and hopefully to the US. But so they announced it. They have, when you go to their website, there's now a self-repair link, I guess, that leads you to, you read the manual first, then you can order the parts. It's all pretty, I want to say straightforward. Repairing stuff is never straightforward. It's not an easy task.
It's not straightforward. It's complicated.
Did you get a chance to look at any of it?
I did look at the manuals. They are pretty well-designed manuals.
They are.
But I think the one thing that people are pointing out is that you're only saving a little bit of money if you do it yourself. So for a battery, it's $60 to just get a replacement battery at Apple. And if you buy the battery repair kit, it's like $59. But if you send your old battery back, they give you like a $20 discount or something.
Now,
but
is it $50 for the battery? Because it's
60.
So yeah, it's like $49 for the rental stuff, right?
Do you need the rental stuff?
Oh, maybe not for a battery. Maybe I'm mistaken.
I don't know
there.
If you need that for a battery. They have like a kit you can get, though.
For the battery?
For everything, I believe.
For everything.
To open it up.
Some of the things on there are super intense.
Yeah.
There's like a
whole press for the screen.
For the screen. And there's there's a different one to take the screen off. It looks like it's like 2 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet. Big thing that would have to go on your desk. And it basically is, it like warms the screen up, suction cups it, and then pulls it off.
I imagine that it's probably for repair centers that are not like official Apple places that want to do it for other people.
That's what I thought, but there is a part in their newsroom article that says the rental kits will ship to customers for free. So the fact that they're putting the term customers in there, and it also says Apple tools available to customers on self-service repair store are the same that are used by the Apple Repair Network.
Wow. So, situation.
Yeah, can you imagine just being like, I want to save like $20.
I feel like the shipping on that is going to cost Apple more than $20.
It feels kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
And if we want to jump back to what you said about price.
We were sort of talking about this right before the podcast started. It seems like this is sort of a way for Apple to say like, hey, we will technically let you do this yourself. and you will save money, but the delta is like $20.
Yeah, which I think
that's if you send your old part back.
If you send it back, I think we agreed. I think Marquez agreed with us. And I saw a bunch of comments on Reddit is like, you're saving $20 to $30, which seems totally reasonable for labor for someone else
to do. That's insanely cheap for labor, especially for something that's like a little difficult and you could potentially break your device.
Yeah.
That's why most repair shops are like $100, because if they break the part, they have to buy another one. Mm-hmm. And then the time it takes, like that's going to take you probably an hour.
And
you
shipping.
Have to be really careful. And
if you
shipping,
want a week, if you go to a store, you might be able to have it the same day. Like, and most of us don't have a backup phone or the time to wait for like a screen press to ship to you and then learn how to do that.
I mean, if you're able to use that press to fix other people's devices, is that the case, or do you have to send it back within a specific period
of time? I don't
know.
There also was on the site a part that just showed the flat out price for some of those. I believe they were like $200 to $300, which I thought was kind of
cheap.
So I'm wondering if they're also doing that to help potentially stores who are non-Apple authorized stores, people like Louis Rossman and stuff like that, to have some of the genuine parts.
I'm going to have to listen to his take on this whole thing to see what he thinks.
That's a really good point.
He's a guy that's actually repairing Apple stuff.
Yeah, we should probably try and get him on at some time soon to see what he thinks about this. So all of that felt kind of strange and almost not unnecessary, but it feels like the harder thing to do than to go get it fixed, right?
Yeah.
My initial thought on this was, if we do see repairability scores or they're in other places, this is going to automatically make their score better, right? It's going to make their number on that score better, which will look better to selling it.
This is true. Like we talked about on the Right to Repair deep dive episode, like countries like France will have full repairability scores that are like put on the boxes of things.
And on the websites as well, like right next to the buy button. Mm-hmm. And there was a study that showed a very large amount of people, if a phone were the same price or even slightly different, they would pick the one with the better score, even if they've been using a device.
Yeah,
before.
It's kind of like a review in a way, right? And it gives you that peace of mind that you're going to be able to fix it.
So it only goes back to the iPhone 12.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm guessing that's just because it was last generation and they maybe don't have, I don't know what they're doing with all the parts of the old stuff. So I'm hoping, you know, when the iPhone 16 is out, they still have repairability for iPhone 12. We don't know that right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you bought, like, AppleCare is, what, 3 years?
I don't know. I've never had an iPhone.
I believe AppleCare lasts 3 years. I need to double check that. But
I thought it was 2. I'll double check now.
You might be right. But I'm pretty sure Apple probably has parts for iPhone 11s. They still sell iPhone 11s, which means they almost definitely have parts.
So I think you'll probably see being able to order iPhone 12 stuff for a while. Just right now, it's only 2 generations because it's a whole new program and everything.
David's correct. 3 years.
Yeah, three years. Cool. So if it's 3 years, like if they can repair your iPhone 11, you should probably be able to as well. And that feels a little seedy because it's kind of like, well, if people have iPhone 11s and they break, they should they're like trying to get you to upgrade to an iPhone 13 or 14.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be the people with the 11s and with the 10s that are going to start needing fixing or just to get a new phone, and they want you to get
I would venture that would be their reasoning for that is if you're on a 4-year-old phone, it's like, oh, you're probably thinking of upgrading soon already. If you're on a brand new 13, you're probably like, I want to get this fixed. I just got this phone. Whether that's the right reason of thinking or not is
but
another question.
I think it would be really fun. We'll see if we can make this happen, but it'd be really fun for us to try to repair.
100% want to do this. With Apple products, I want to try it with Google and Samsung. Uh-huh. I want to see what all of them are like and what all these kits are like.
All of this said and done, though, I mean, the fact that you can is good.
We might be ripping this apart, but the fact that Apple's taking a step, I think a lot of people are going to be super pumped about just the manuals being out, because that's been a huge thing Louis Rossman's talked about, I think mostly with MacBooks, and we don't see that right now. But just seeing manuals of internals of things is, I think, a good step.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people thought that was ever going to happen.
Yeah, especially with Apple, right?
Especially with Apple,
Yeah.
So all in all, really cool. Like you said, we should definitely do like a video. I want to try it really bad. I really want to try it. Yeah. And I want to see what, if they actually ship those giant press things or whatever.
Yeah. It'd be fun.
But that sounds really cool. And we'll see how it goes in the future. I'm kind of itching to the trivia answers.
the itching. You're making me feel like I'm gonna itch now.
Took a pre-workout before
it was an accident.
an accidental pre-workout before the podcast. So he's ready to go. You better get both these answers right with and rip the microphone off the table as you do it.
I'm gonna get these so wrong.
All right. The first question.
Okay.
When did Tesla release its first car? What do you guys think?
Can I give two answers?
No.
There.
Shoot.
Podmaster Adam here has a strict rule book. I have a guess. Do you want me to go first? Or?
I'm going to go first.
Cool.
My original, like the first thing that came to mind in my head was 2009. Don't know if that's too early. So my second guess was going to be 2011. But because we can only have one guess, I will go with 2009 and it's going to be wrong. It's probably going to be 2011. But anyway.
My
that's
guess
the Roadster, right?
The original Roadster.
Because it was a Lotus
body.
Yeah. So but that Lotus has been around for so long, I could
it
see.
It has been around for a bit, yeah. My guess is 2012.
Right in between.
I guess I also don't know. Did you say this is like when it started selling or when it was announced? Or it doesn't change my answer either way. But I think 2012 is when I remember. But I might also be wrong. That might be Model S.
That original Lotus one was in such short supply. Didn't they only make like 50 of them or something?
I think it was more than 50, but there's a lot. So like the way I kind of think about it is I first met Marquez playing Ultimate in 2013 and he was really excited to test drive a Model S then.
A Model S?
Oh, so 2012 is probably too late.
Yeah.
But I'm going to stick with it.
Oh, my 2009 answer might be.
It might.
The answer, 2008.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
good guess.
Does that make me right?
No.
No.
What? I was 1 year off.
Still off.
That was on pod quiz rules. He usually gives you one year either way, but
this isn't pod quiz
Adams,
rules.
This isn't pod quiz, baby. This is waveform.
Dang. Well,
it's okay. It's not yours. It's Marquez's points.
Yeah, it's Marquez's points, not yours, so
but
it's fine.
He definitely okay, whatever. What I
He Marquez, probably would have gotten listening though, to so this. He's mad.
If you're listening to this, I think I should have got those points for you, but okay.
All right, next one.
Oh no, this next one I'm not.
Oh yeah, I don't
get.
Think I
there's
I'm
no
be
way.
I have to give you guys a hard one.
Can you give me an easier one?
Mozilla Firefox was originally named what?
I'm just going to say it was named just Mozilla. Mozilla. I've always said Mozilla.
I think it's Mozilla.
Oh, I don't know. Mozilla, Mozilla.
Well,
I think
Mr. it's Mozilla. Podmaster over here.
I only read this.
I lived down the street from Mozilla for like 3 years, but they always had the Firefox logo out there. Hmm. I would also wager it was just Mozilla.
All right. The correct answer.
Oh, no. It's going to be like Turtle or something.
Mozilla, I guess. Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Its first name originally was Mozilla Phoenix.
With a PH or with an F?
PH.
I want to see like what the logo for that.
Yeah.
I wonder why they decided to do a fox. Oh, their old logo is so bad.
Oh my God.
We'll show it on the screen for anyone listening.
Listener, it's like, how do I even describe this?
It looks like clip art.
Yeah, it looks like a duck that's on fire.
Or like a swan with its wings out.
Yeah, that's
like,
on fire.
Like a swan that's trying to intimidate you that's on fire, but in like really bad Microsoft Word clip art.
So I mean, it looks like pretty web 1.0.
Yeah, these old ones.
Yeah.
New Firefox logo, much, much better.
Very good.
Great logo,
yes.
Actually.
Yes. I use Edge.
Do you really?
On my phone.
On your phone.
I use Edge on my phone.
That's even weirder.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't judge people's browsers on phones. I feel like I'm sure there's a lot of people who are very dedicated to what they have.
I'm not that dedicated. I just want to ruin my life. So I use Edge on my phone, Safari on my laptop, and Chrome on my Windows computer. So I just don't want any of my passwords to be stored.
All right. That was a fun episode. Thank you for filling in for us. We appreciate it. I hope everyone had a good time. I think that was a fun episode. And catch you all in the next one.
Goodbye, friends.
There we go. The peace sign. Marquez would be sad if he didn't.
Oh.
There it is. That wasn't forced at all. Waveform is produced by Adam Molina. We are partnered with Vox Media, and our intro-outro music was created by Vane and Silk.
We'll be right back.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.